Welcome to the Impact Equals podcast, in which we explore the impact investment industry, what it is, why it matters, and how it's reshaping how business is undertaken in many parts of the world. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson, and today we're asking how the climate crisis is affecting businesses in emerging economies. These countries, particularly those in Africa, South and Southeast Asia, and the Caribbean, are among the nations most exposed to the effects of the climate emergency. And if decisive action is taken now, it can help the transition towards net zero and support the development of new technologies and business models. At British International Investment, we've carried out research with senior executives from across our portfolio to find out how the crisis is affecting their companies, how they are responding, and the ways investors can better support them as we move to a greener future. This research was shared in the third edition of our Emerging Economies Climate Report. Through it, we found that climate change is now impacting more firms than ever before, with 79% of respondents saying climate change is impacting their organisations today, up from 68% in 2022. We recently launched the new Emerging Economies Climate Report at an event hosted in partnership with the ODI and the Grantham Research Institute. At the event, our Managing Director and Head of Climate, Diversity and Advisory, Dr. Amoli Amin, was joined by a panel of expert speakers, both in person and online, to dig deeper into the findings and explore how we can address climate risks and maximise opportunities in emerging economies. One of the key findings from the research was the increase in the number of people concerned about the impact of physical climate risks on their companies, with 89% saying they are concerned about them, up from 70% in 2022. And we begin with this in mind, as Shivanand Nimbagi, CEO of Ayana Renewable Power, one of India's fastest growing renewables businesses, tells Amoli about how the climate crisis is affecting his company.
Based on what you have seen in this in our report, but more specifically the how you in India and Ayana is experiencing climate related risks, whether that's transition risk, which as a renewables company, I mean you're part of the solution to managing transition risk, but also how maybe physical climate risk, climate impacts may be affecting your business and your strategy.
Yeah, we undertake all possible studies. For example, you know, even if the wind speeds is going to occur once in 100 years, certain wind speeds level, what we do is we assess that and design the structures to be able to withstand those wind speeds. The second is, for example, in Rajasthan, the temperature during summer at times, you know, once in 10, 15 years can get to about 50 degrees. So we design the plants with those. The probability of the plant operating at those temperature conditions is not on a day-to-day basis, but the plants are designed. Then at the same time, we will also look at the possibility of flooding of the plant. And then accordingly, the drainage systems are designed right up front. So those are the kind of, you know, studies that we undertake and help in designing the plants. And also most important now is the weather monitoring and the weather forecasting has improved significantly. And now we have a lot of sensors that are getting placed all around all parts of the world. So you are able to, you know, see the historical patterns, and based on various modeling, then we are able to see what the next 30, 40 years is going to look like. So this, of course, you know, continues to change. And accordingly, our analytical skills have completely changed in terms of how the plants are going to perform.
Like Ayana, Apollo Agriculture is another business significantly affected by the climate crisis. It helps smallholder farmers in Kenya and Zambia to increase their profits. Ben Unjenga, the company's co-founder, explained the challenges climate change is bringing for the farmers they work with.
The impact on agriculture is very hard when you look at climate change. And one of the things you can see today, there is changes in temperature and also precipitation patterns. Amaria, I can be able to tell you, like today in Kenya, by mid-March, that is when they have very heavy rains and it's when our farmers are planting. But I can tell you, I'm looking outside and I'm seeing very hot sun. And that is why it can tell you, like, we are in it and it's hard. And when I was in the field last week, most farmers even are confused. Like in such an unpredictable environment, you find even farmers are not sure if the rains will come. They are not sure if at all they want to even do more investments, or they want to take risk and even do half an acre if at all they were planning to invest in 1 acre. So that kind of an environment is very hard and is even having very significant impact on yield. Last season we did in Zambia, the farmers were supposed to harvest by June this year. But as you know, Zambia, they have been affected by a very bad drought, actually. And right now, if our farmers didn't have the insurance cover that we bundle in our package, I think those farmers will be going through a tough time. But I'm happy that with Apollo, because of the way we bundle, including climate insurance package, these farmers will be pursuing the insurance companies so that these farmers can be able to access compensation and possibly go towards offsetting their loan.
Speaking on the panel at the ODI's offices in London, Nick Robbins, Professor of Sustainable Finance at the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment, shared his thoughts on the report's findings and the examples provided by Shivanand and Ben.
I think what was really heartening listening to the two examples is that actually in emerging economies, you can have rapid growth of solution companies. So both IANA in terms of clean energy and in terms of agriculture, in terms of Apollo. And I think that's what we, particularly in countries like the UK, where we struggle to get beyond 0% growth, looking to these solutions, is we need rapid growth of solution companies, given the scale of the crisis. But then I think if you look at the findings of the survey, I think you see these sort of gaps emerging. You have those very big 97%, 98% saying climate is essential for business success. Yes, we need better investments. But I was struck, but only sort of 47% are actually incorporating climate into financial planning, which of course is the sort of the engine room of businesses. And actually that has gone down. So there seems to be a sort of maybe an implementation gap. And I think that speaks to the need for broader questions about structural financial reform, particularly this year. And it's probably something, Shiv and Ben, that you're not particularly involved in, but the climate negotiators this year have got to come up with a new climate finance deal, the very attractively known new collective quantified goal, NCQG. And it's very relevant for these companies and the peer group and BII's portfolio, because the world has $500 trillion of assets. Only 3% of those are in emerging economies. And we need to mobilize more investment into companies such as Apollo and IANA. And at the moment, the transition mechanisms between those pools of capital in the global north and the investment opportunities in the global south are not working. So I think, again, so it's an immediate issue, impressive examples, it can be done, but we've got some real structural issues, perhaps both within companies, but also in the broader financial system.
We'll come back to you, Shiv. I mean, Nick posed an interesting point there. You know, how do you balance climate-related objectives or risks in this context and your broader financial planning? Are there tensions? Are they competing? Or are you starting to see them coming together?
In terms of the risks, as I explained earlier on, the clear process by which you are able to identify all the risks with respect to climate change. Not only that, but at the same time, as a company, you know, we do the studies covering all aspects of ESG. And that particular study and the risk analysis is not just restricted to the location where we are trying to set up the project, but that also covers aspects around the complete supply chain on which the project is going to be built. The assessment for this type of a business that we are in terms of generating power from renewable energy sources, we are looking at setting up the plants which can deliver over the next 30 to 35 years. So there's a lot of work that goes in around, and there's a lot of, you know, studies that go, there's a lot of development that is happening as we speak.
Also on the panel in London was Michael Jacobs, Professor of Political Economy at Sheffield University and Visiting Senior Fellow at ODI. Michael discussed how finance can reach businesses in emerging economies to help them respond to the climate crisis.
What strikes me about this conversation is we are sitting in London. We are being hosted, co-hosted by BII. So naturally, the focus is on international finance and international public finance. And those are not the most important sources of finance for most businesses in developing countries. The most important sources of finance for most businesses in developing countries will be domestic. And even the public finance will be domestic public finance. There are over 500 public development banks in the world. And as there are only 200 countries, that's an average of 2.5 public development banks per country. There is a lot of money that isn't either international finance, public finance, or international private finance. And the international private finance tends to flow to a rather small number of countries that have market access, that are would even be considered by most credit committees, investment committees, in a Western pension fund or insurance fund. And non-concessional lending, even by MDBs, goes to some countries and not others. So I'm interested in the wider ecosystem. In a way, the question I want to ask Ben and Shiv is, you know, yes, you get a bit of money from BII, but where does the rest of it come from? Is that from domestic capital markets, and is that mobilized just in the domestic private capital markets? Are you engaged with any public development banks that are national? And how does that ecosystem work? One of the things that's going on in the MDB, the Multilateral Development Bank reform agenda, which is quite a big agenda, is the idea of country platforms, in which it is presumed, hoped, that different financial institutions will meet together in a common place to look at the investment needs of a country or a sector. Interested to know whether that seems to be happening for you, whether you can see coordination between the different financial institutions, because I think these are the questions on the ground that really matter.
Almost all respondents to the survey agreed that targeted investment is needed to reduce climate exposure, with 98% saying better investment is needed to help the transition to net zero or become more climate resilient. Although the demand from businesses is there, Ben and Jenga said it can be challenging for companies to identify sources of funding.
For sure, there is inadequate funding for innovation and scaling the proven models so that they can be replicated in many regions. And what I can say, that where the money is coming or the resources are coming, is too from the global impact investors. And as the same as we know in agriculture, even for the SMEs, it's too often challenging to secure loans even from banks, and the same case even for farmers, but also same case even for businesses from investors, because there is always this perceived high risk, especially with climate change, in terms of like the risk that is embedded in the agricultural business and even the seasonality nature of our businesses, right? So you find like they're not very appealing to many investors. And that make it even challenging for some of these innovations to be able to raise the resources that they need to be able to scale. As I said, some of these resources also needs to have some patient capital, because with the recent climate change, it require a lot of work so that you can be able to kind of make some headway in terms of supporting the smallholder farmers. I'm so excited to be able to see BII being part of the team that are support us in terms of early journey, in terms of what we are doing, and we are making great impact. And looking to see more investors coming on board to be able to support us in terms of getting these solutions, climate solutions to our farmers.
And we ended the discussion on a positive note. We asked our speakers what makes them feel optimistic about the future. Here's BII's Director and Head of Climate Change, Nicola Mustatea.
I think what excites me is actually, I think the entrepreneurship that we are seeing in our markets to actually come forward with these sorts of climate solutions. Obviously, we have Shiv and Ben here, who are two great examples of entrepreneurs who are actually addressing these challenges. But I think over the last couple of years in BII, I think that's where we really saw more and more opportunities. So it's either entrepreneurs who really get, you know, that they need to adjust, that they need to implement these measures, or actually taking advantage of the sort of business opportunity to offer these solutions. And yeah, I think there's lots of great ideas out there, lots of great entrepreneurs. So from an investment perspective, I think it's a really exciting time. Obviously, it needs to accelerate much more going forward.
There are a lot of areas that are happening in terms of driving the just transition. And I think a lot of ambitious targets have been set. And in addition to this, there is a focus on getting the manufacturing play in place. And also to drive this in a way that, you know, supports all the aspects around ESG governance and everything. There is an increased awareness around ESG now. Government has tightened a lot of, I would say standards, policies, approvals, covering these aspects. So we would see that, you know, a lot of this growth and everything else that is going to happen is in a very, very, transparent way, and in a way where policy regulations is aimed at protecting the climate and driving the growth, looking at all the risks that we spoke earlier about. So all in all, exciting times, I would say.
I think what makes me excited is that the conversations are already happening, right? I'm so excited with the work the BII have done on the report, and also already you're already doing it. You mentioned 30% of the investment that you are making on targeted approach to climate smart. So that may give me like a lot of encouragement that it's not only a talk, but we already in it, implementing.
The world is not in a great place, you might have noticed. But the pressure now to increase and improve, not just increase, development and climate finance, there is pressure building. And interestingly, the leadership for this is coming from the Global South, which is in itself interesting and important. And although the Northern powers are fiscally, they perceive themselves to be very constrained, nevertheless, pressure is building. There is pressure for recapitalization of the multilateral development banks to squeeze more money out of the existing balance sheets and so on. And that is a source of hope at an otherwise very difficult time in international relations.
So again, very inspired by the leadership. And I think also the recognition now that sort of climate is not just a sort of technocratic thing that is a burden for people, but we need to think about this as a very inclusive process, the question of fairness and the question of just transition. That's now taken for granted. I think the next few years are obviously crucial. We do have a timeline we need to deliver. And that means that the shape of the investment curve has to be sort of exponential. And we've seen, I think, Shiv talking about that in India for renewables. But we need to have that same sort of increase in deployment and impact for people across all sectors. And so that's the real challenge.
Technology is changing. We have a lot now in the form of fintech, smart systems, smarter systems, whether that's for energy, for water, etc. So the key now is how to really accelerate the transfer of those and investment of those in all countries, but including those much smaller markets, which are harder to get the scale that is fortunately now starting, we're seeing happening in India. For smaller markets, that's much more challenging. I feel optimistic about technology. I feel we have a lot of those solutions. We just need to remove barriers to really scale investment.
Thank you to all our panelists for sharing their views on this important topic. If you'd like to read more about the ways the climate crisis is affecting businesses and emerging economies, then please do have a read of the Emerging Economies Climate Report. You can find a link to it in the episode notes or on our website, bii.co.uk. That's it for today. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson. Until the next time, thank you for listening.